I think all of us see patients with acute COPD exacerbations. Many can present in extremis.
But otherwise, I'm a big buy on this study. I really like it.
The low intensity had BMIs of 24. We don't see that in my emergency department.
Welcome back, everyone, to Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. Mike Winters from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland. As always, so happy and particularly so thankful that all of you are listening to our podcast. We love the fact that you all listen to us each month. I love hearing many of you say within the ED that you've listened to the various episodes, and really, we couldn't be more grateful and appreciative. And as we record this particular one, we are quickly approaching the Thanksgiving holiday in the United States, and I'm sure I speak for all four of us that we are grateful truly to have you listening here to the podcast. Before we get into the topic at hand, a very common treatment in a certain patient population, we'll save that for a few minutes from now. Let me turn to my amazing co-host here on CCPEM. I'm going to go all the way west first, check in with Dr. Rob Rodriguez. Rob, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I am currently on a sabbatical looking at emergency care along the border on both sides of the border. And I just came back from El Paso and Juarez and learning a lot. And it's a great project.
Sounds wonderful, Rob. And thanks so much for all that you're doing down there. Let's traverse the country to Louisiana. Dr. W.
Yeah, so I've just returned in the opposite direction. I went to Western North Carolina to check in on folks who were impacted by the hurricane, to kind of do some trauma-informed care check-ins and just communicate my gratitude for what they're going through and what they're doing to recover. Shout out to those people negatively impacted along the Gulf Coast as well as Western North Carolina and that area from the hurricanes this season.
Absolutely, Peter. The two of you are doing great, great work. I'm so, so appreciative. All right, up to Philly. Dr. Greenwood.
Hey, guys. Great to be with all of you on this podcast. Everything's going really well up here. I really want to give a shout out to all the emergency medicine residents in the United States that are applying for critical care fellowship and have made their rank lists. We have two rock star emergency physicians that I'm really keeping my fingers crossed who are applying for the critical care match. One of them in neurocritical care and the other one in critical care medicine. And so it's that time of year for our upcoming fellows, but I wish all of you the best. And for those who are taking a fellowship position next year, excited for each of you as you find out your upcoming destination. So good luck.
Awesome. Wishing everyone the best. All right. Well, let's pivot to our education for this podcast. And dare I say that I think all of us, regardless of our practice setting, see patients with acute COPD exacerbations. And many can present in extremis to the ED requiring resuscitation. And a very common therapy applied for patients with acute COPD exacerbation is the application of non-invasive positive pressure ventilation, typically BiPAP versus CPAP. And with respect to this therapy, a very interesting study was just published within the last few weeks in JAMA titled The Effect of High Intensity versus Low Intensity Non-Invasive Positive Pressure Ventilation on the need for endotracheal intubation in patients presenting with an acute COPD exacerbation. So I'm going to turn things over to Dr. W. Peter, give us the background and really tell us what the objective of this particular study is.
You got it. So this is a great study. I'm very excited by it. And just a little bit about the background. We all know that some of the strongest evidence for the utilization of non-invasive positive pressure ventilation is in the undifferentiated COPD population. We know that it's commonly used for the management of these critically ill patients, and it starts within our emergency departments. We know that non-invasive positive pressure ventilation for acute COPD exacerbations has been associated with decreased rates of intubation and lower in-house mortality. So big differences in outcomes. For the background for this paper, they described low-intensity, non-invasive ventilation as being an IPAP, so an inspiratory positive airway pressure, less than 18. Now, I know many of you trained and were taught to either start at 10 and 0 or 10 and 5, and others at 12 and 5 or even 15 and 5. But for the purposes of this study, they used low intensity as being less than 18 centimeters of IPAP for their clinical practice. They used high intensity, non-invasive, as being inspiratory positive airway pressures 20 to 30 centimeters of water. Now, this is what we typically in the U.S. would call exceedingly high, but in their theory, they're using 20 to 30 as their routine, with the assumption that it may be more effective at increasing alveolar ventilation and offsetting the extra dead space of the face mask that's provided. So presently, when compared to low intensity, non-invasive positive pressure ventilation, high intensity, non-invasive positive pressure ventilation has been shown to be superior at decreasing inspiratory effort and improving gas exchange, also improving ventilatory function, improving patient tolerance, and reducing elevated levels of PaCO2. However, the effect of high-intensity, non-invasive positive pressure ventilation on the need for intubation has yet to be assessed, hence this study. So the objective to determine whether high-intensity, non-invasive positive pressure ventilation could actually reduce the need for intubation during hospitalization in patients with an acute COPD exacerbation associated with hypercapnia when compared with low-intensity, non-invasive positive pressure ventilation.
Outstanding, Peter. Way to set the background and the objective. Let's toss things over now to Dr. Rodriguez to take us through the methods of this particular study.
Thanks, Mike and Peter. This was an investigator-initiated two-group, single-blind, multi-center randomized trial conducted at 30 general respiratory wards across China, and these were notably non-ICU patients. They were general respiratory ward patients, and they included adults greater than 18 years of age who had an arterial pH less than 7.35 and who had persistently elevated PaCO2s greater than 45 after 6 hours of low-intensity NIPPPV. And that's a notable point about this is they only included them after 6 hours of low intensity NIPPV. And they excluded pediatric patients, patients who had excessive respiratory secretions or upper airway obstruction, patients who had recent oral, facial, or cranial trauma surgery, patients who had recent gastric or esophageal surgery, patients who had active upper GI bleeding, and notably patients who were requiring high levels of oxygen manifested by a P to F ratio of less than 100, patients who had pneumothorax, patients who had severe hemodynamic instability, and patients who had a severe metabolic acidosis with pH less than 7.2. So there are a lot of exclusions here. They're really trying to get at that sort of stable, semi-stable COPD type patient who's not severely hypoxic and not having other contraindications to high intensity NIPPV. In terms of the interventions, they randomized patients on a one-to-one basis to either high-intensity NIPPV, in which the IPAP was initially adjusted in increments or decrements of 1 to 2 centimeters of water to obtain a tidal volume of between 10 to 15 milliliters per kilo of predicted body weight, which was usually in the range of 20 to 30 centimeters of water, and a respiratory rate less than 25 cycles per minute, And they made, in the high-intensity NIPPV group, they made subsequent adjustments based on ABG values to target normocapnia. In the low-intensity NIPPV group, they had an IPAP that was initially adjusted in increments or decrements of 1 to 2 centimeters of water to a max of 20 centimeters of water to obtain a tidal volume of 6 to 10 milliliters per kilo of predicted body weight and a respiratory rate less than 25 cycles per minute. And they made subsequent adjustments to IPAP were based on ABG values to achieve a pH of 7.35 or higher. Patients were encouraged to use the NIPPV continuously for the first 6 hours after randomization and at least 10 hours per day in both arms. IPAP and daily use of NIPPV gradually decreased when the target ABG levels were reached and clinical conditions improved. In terms of their primary outcome, the primary outcome was need for endotracheal intubation. And the indications for that pH less than 7.25 with a PaCO2 that increased greater than 20% compared to baseline, or clinical signs of need for intubation like altered mentation, accessory muscle use, or thoracoabdominal paradoxical movement, excessive secretions, aspiration, vomiting, upper GI bleed, hemodynamic instability that was not responsive to IV fluids or low dose pressors, and cardiac arrest, in which case you of course would need to be intubated. Their secondary outcomes were numerous, and they included any endotracheal intubation during hospitalization, endotracheal intubation by day 28, NPPV weaning success, mortality, which was stratified according to in-hospital, day 28 and day 90 mortality, ICU admission, hospital discharge, hospital length of stay, days free of mechanical ventilation, days free of ICU admission, and hospital readmission at day 90. So those were their methods. John, can you tell us about the results? What did they find?
Yeah, absolutely, Rob. So this was a moderate-sized randomized controlled trial. So a total of 300 patients were randomized to one arm or the other. In fact, for the high-intensity group, 147 patients were randomized here versus 153 patients to the low-intensity group. When we look at the baseline characteristics of the patients in terms of age and common comorbidities, seemed to be pretty similar. So the average age was around 73 years old, and it was a predominantly male population, a little under 70% male. Let's take a look at the ventilator interventions. So the mean IPAP at 2 hours in the high intensity group was set to 25 centimeters of water. And compare that to the low intensity group where it was 17. So there's about a 7 centimeter water difference between the high and low intensity group. Now, the tidal volumes at 2 hours were a little bit different as a result of those settings. So in the high intensity group, it was around 11 cc's per kilo of predicted body weight compared to a little under 8 in the low intensity group. In terms of the median daily use in the two groups, in the high intensity group, the median use was about 20 hours on day one, 18 hours on day two, and 17 on day three. So a slight decrease in duration compared to in the low intensity group of 18, 17, and 16 hours a day up to day three. So we might be asking, well, how did this high versus low intensity BiPAP affect PCO2, right? Because ultimately that's what we're trying to change in the COPD population. Well, in the high intensity group, if you did more BiPAP or if you increased the high group, it seemed to have some effect on CO2. So the high intensity PCO2 was around 53 compared to 64 millimeters of mercury in the low intensity group. And more patients in the high intensity BiPAP group achieved normocapnia compared to the low intensity group. So the authors here, they did an interim analysis. And when they did this, the primary outcome differed significantly between groups of about 9%. And the Data Safety Monitoring Board terminated the trial as an early result. Now, remember, though, this was based on the composite outcome. We're not talking about any of the secondary outcomes of actual received intubation, just that they met those criteria that Rob was talking about for that composite outcome. So for them, they determined that this was pretty successful at the interim analysis, and they were going to shut down the trial, which we can always talk about limitations, the challenges of an early termination. But let's take a look at the primary outcome report in the paper. So the primary outcome of meeting this pre-specified criteria for endotracheal intubation in the high intensity group was only 4.8%, and compare that to 13.7% in this low intensity BiPAP group. Let's turn to the secondary outcomes. Of the 21 patients in the low intensity BiPAP group who met criteria for intubation, 13 patients crossed over to the high intensity group. Of these 13, 11 were not intubated. So all of the other secondary outcomes did not differ significantly between the two groups. Now, we're always worried about safety outcomes in any of these randomized control trials. This is really important, thinking about all the potential complications of our intervention. So abdominal distension occurred more frequently in the high intensity BiPAP group, but no patient requested removal of BiPAP due to abdominal pain or distension or anything like that. It doesn't appear that there are any cases of pneumothorax in the high intensity BiPAP group, and serious events were rare in both groups. So from a result standpoint, just to summarize, this appears to be a successful trial in the sense that there was a positive outcome, which we're not used to seeing in critical care trials, of this need for mechanical ventilation by endotracheal intubation. But certainly there's got to be some limitations here. So Mike, what did you think?
Absolutely. Well, let's just hit some of the limitations. And you mentioned this in your discussion on the interim analysis, John, that it was terminated early. Overall, the authors, with respect to their statistical analysis, set out to target 600 patients. And so that was stopped after 300. Certainly not blinded in terms of using high intensity versus low intensity, so knowing the numbers of non-invasive positive pressure ventilation. Trial wasn't set or powered for that important secondary outcome of mortality. And as you alluded to in the secondary outcomes, a number of patients actually crossed over from the low intensity to the high intensity group. Overall, you know, I think this is something that is a new way to think about non-invasive positive pressure ventilation for many of our listeners. Peter, in your background, you talked about the typical settings that we're used to starting off with these patients and seeing the improvement and knowing that it does work in terms of decreasing intubation and lowering in-hospital mortality. But with this particular trial, after patients weren't necessarily improving after a few hours, then they were then randomized to that high versus low intensity, non-invasive, as we've gone through already. And that primary outcome, more so did they actually meet criteria to be intubated? Not that they actually got intubated, but did they meet the criteria that would suggest that they should actually undergo mechanical ventilation and no longer remain on non-invasive positive pressure ventilation? And those that still remained in low intensity switched over, 11 out of 13 didn't get intubated. So I think that it speaks for some promise and really further thought, further look into this, the utilization of these pretty high pressures per se. So I don't know that I'm ready to start dialing it up this quickly with respect to ED patients that we're seeing and they're boarding in the ED or that we're continuing to manage them on non-invasive positive pressure ventilation, really cranking it up to that 20 to 30. But I think it certainly provides rationale for ongoing studies. I'd be interested, you know, Peter, I'm going to kick things over to you. Your thoughts on this particular study and implications for clinical practice.
Got it. I'm excited by this study, but I got to tell you that I think there's some pretty tremendous limitations in comparing this group to the patients that I manage on a daily basis in my emergency department with COPD. We know that COPD is very heterogeneous in its combination and of emphysema, chronic bronchitis, asthma, as well as obesity, hypoventilation syndrome. If you peel away the study and see what the BMI is on the study, so both groups, high intensity and the low intensity, had BMIs of 24. We don't see that in my emergency department. I'm sorry, we don't see that. And it would be really the quintessential pink puffer emphysematous patient who's rail thin and breathing rapidly with pursed-lip breathing that I think you could really apply to this data set that they studied. This doesn't look like Jabba the Hutt, who constantly comes to my emergency department and has obesity, hypoventilation syndrome, and on their best day at home is compensated and a member of the 60-60 club with a PaO2 that's 60 and a PCO2 that's 60. I don't know if I extrapolate particularly this data set and these results to that patient. However, it does look like the emphysematous patient may benefit from a higher value. I would like to see the study duplicated in patients with obesity, hypoventilation, and see how that looks. But again, this isn't my world in New Orleans, in my emergency department, and my patient population. But a component of this with the lower BMI actually is. And so it kind of, I'm intrigued for one patient population and skeptical about the other.
Great, great thoughts, Peter. Thanks so much. Rob, your turn.
I hadn't thought of that limitation, Peter. I commend you on that. But otherwise, I'm a big buy on this study. I really like it. I think it's intuitive to me. It makes sense. I've already been doing this, to be honest. I mean, I haven't had a pre-existing limit to my IPAP pressure in patients. I always guide my IPAP by ventilation and by the tidal volumes that I'm getting. And I've never really used a max limit of 20 centimeters of water. I just really base my IPAP on how much ventilation they're getting, how do they look. Some I don't I'm not a huge fan of repeat ABGs, but if they're available, I'll also use those. So I like the principles in the study. I agree that we can use a higher IPAP. I would say I'm a big buy.
Outstanding, Rob. All right, John, you sought our opinion. We're circling back to you to bring us home.
These are all really good points, guys. And I think I just have a couple of things to maybe add. I think it's important for our ED clinicians out there to recognize that the inclusion criteria required these patients to receive low intensity for a period of time. And I think it was around 6 hours or so prior to being escalated to that high pressure arm or not. So this doesn't fully fit into, I think, a lot of our emergency departments where, these decisions might be made up front versus on the back end after a trial low intensity. Certainly, it, I think, introduces some selection bias in patients who benefited from the low intensity BiPAP already. So definitely worth just considering as you're making those decisions of, some patients might actually just benefit from low intensity while you're getting bronchodilators in and they wouldn't have qualified for this trial. So definitely something to keep in mind. I kind of like Rob's approach. Go to the bedside, take a look at the patient, see how they're doing. Is the positive pressure you're prescribing resulting in ventilation? Those are the things that actually make a difference and I think also impact outcomes in patient care. So this is not going to change my practice. But certainly, it's a great example of how composite outcomes and some subtleties in the inclusion criteria can determine whether or not this applies to your ED population when reading some of these critical care trials.
Outstanding, outstanding comments by the three of you. Thanks so much. And I think with that, we're going to bring this podcast to a close. We're just about on time. Can't thank you all once again for tuning in to listen to this particular podcast. Very common critical therapy we use in a critically ill patient population. Let us know what questions you have. Let us know what comments you have based upon this particular trial. Well, that happens to be called the Happen trial. So, with that, once again, as we led off with the intro to this particular podcast, we want to express our sincere thanks and gratitude to each and every one of you for listening to us here on CCPEM. Keep the comments flowing, the suggestions for future podcasts. We love hearing from all of you, and sincerely hope that for those of you in the US celebrating the Thanksgiving holiday, that you do have some time to spend with those that you hold most dear. Until our next podcast, bye for now.